know that this is just a filthy figment of my diseased imagination.
Live from New York.
I was hoping to interest you in improving your mind.
Science, history, paranormal activity, mysteries of the ages.
A lot of scary things can happen.
Sit back and get ready to be
scared. We're perfectly ordinary Americans.
Good evening, everybody. It's Tuesday, August 4th, 2009. You're listening to Scared on the Airwaves. With your host, the Scared Crew, part paranormal investigators, part urban explorers, and, as of this weekend, demonologists in training. Hi, my name is Brian J. Cano, and in the crew tonight, my co-host and partner in crime, Chris Mancuso.
Word.
And back from his hiatus on the field, Jason Porcino.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
And you've tuned in to hear all things paranormal and all things scared. From Annapolis to Abu Dhabi, from New York to New Zealand, we are coming to you live on the Dark Plains Talk Radio Network. So, what's new with the crew?
It's August 4th already?
It's August 4th.
What happened to, like, the summer?
Like, it's probably going to get a lot hotter, like, in September and November. Because I remember when I was little on Halloween, like, I said this the other day, like, remember, like, when I was little, like, I used to have to wear my suit and go trick-or-treating and with a coat over, and I used to be with my mother, I'd be like, I don't want to wear a coat, they can't see my Batman suit. But the thing is, like, it was cold at the end of October. It was, my birthday is in, well, the Thanksgiving, and it was always, now it's just getting hotter later. The earth is going to tip over.
Well, in current events, speaking of birthdays, there's actually going to be a new birthday today. I just want to congratulate our friends Brian Harnois and his girlfriend Michelle, who just gave birth to little Kylie, 5 pounds, 5 ounces. Congratulations. She's going to be a junior ghost hunter soon enough. Congratulations, guys.
Put him in a backpack, take him with you.
Like Yoda.
Papoose.
Like Yoda on ghost hunts. But let's see, what else is going on in the news? You know, I came across something today. Someone had asked me if I was aware of a new piece of software that's going around. This is actually something you can get on the Apple Store, the App Store for the iPhone.
Okay.
It's called the Ghost Radar. And it's an app you download to your iPhone that supposedly detects change in gravitational forces within the immediate area. They said, oh, it's not accurate, it's not precise, but as it goes on, as it filters out the noise that it knows is, you know, comes from people because it's a phone, it will detect anomalies, and they may or may not be ghosts. And I'm thinking, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Really?
Like, really, are you kidding me? And actually, this is something that I'm totally skeptical about.
I'm saying, like, it sounds like what we were talking about the other day is how, like, this ghost hunting thing has become so mainstream that it's an app, even though it doesn't work, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's not. It's just, like, this random thing. Well, it doesn't really work. It's like, so every time there's a volcanic eruption in Pompeii, everything, there's a ghost at the party. There's a ghost. It picks up, like, you know.
I mean, it's, you're going to see commercials on TV. It's like, are you on a paranormal investigation? There's an app for that.
That's weird, because it's so mainstream now. Like, it's weird.
Are you hungry for a McDonald's after the investigation? There's an app for that, too. Do, 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 do. You know, and it's
we're loving it.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Someone asked me, and it was something that I was totally caught off guard. They're like, hey, have you ever heard of the Ghost Radar? I said, no. They're like, oh, it's a new app for the iPhone. And I'm like, oh, well, first of all, I don't have a cell phone. Don't believe in them. Don't need them. Don't like them. I'm not that important. No one needs to get in touch with me 24/7. But if I did, and they would I need the Ghost Radar app on my iPhone?
It's
like, well,
it's going to show up on the big name shows. It's definitely going to show up, and it's going to be like a crossover promotion thing, like drink Pepsi, and they hold the can right up to the screen. It sounds like a really big marketing ploy for that.
They said that right now it's, well, the person who came to me said, hey, you know, I wanted to ask your opinion about it because, you know, I trust your guys' decision, you know, your opinions, and it's all the rave now at Waverly Hills. I'm like, really? Is it on a T-shirt?
Oh, snap.
No, but seriously, this is an official request for all of you listening out there, for everyone in the chat room. If you have an iPhone, check out the Ghost Radar. This is your homework for next week. We want to hear some reports about the Ghost Radar app and what it does, if it works, or if it's bull.
Question. Because I also don't own a cell phone, no desire to ever have one. Like, probably the last two people on the planet without them. But, like, you got to pay for those apps?
The app, I think, is $1.99. I know all the apps are pretty cheap. When Apple opened up their phone to developers, they're like, okay, here's the code. Anyone can develop an app for our product. So it makes it kind of cool because it's interactive. You can make content for your product.
Is that like 99 cents a month? Or
no, just once you get the app, it works.
Well, that's what that phone is made for the apps. Like it's like the phone is the last thing because the actual cell phone provider and the service, everyone complains how horrible it is because who was it, AT&T or whatever?
Right, now they're AT&T.
You're forced to take AT&T. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like the way Apple just, you know, you're closed into that market. So the whole thing is to have the apps. Like, so the more apps, the better. So if you don't get that phone to not have 1,000 apps in it. You know what I mean? And I love appetizers, dude. Chicken fingers, hot wings, mozzarella sticks.
So that is your homework assignment for next week. When we come back next week, I want to see this on my desk. They will be graded and we will be taking attendance. So for those of you listening, that's your assignment.
Yes.
So we're rocking and rolling about this our adventures this weekend, man. We should jump right in unless you got anything else.
Yeah, actually, we do have a couple things to pimp out this week. We just want to remind everybody about an event going on in Prescott, Arizona at the end of September.
Haunted Con, September 24th through 26th.
Tickets are limited. They're running out very quickly. They're running a special right now. You can get a 3-day ticket for the price of a 2-day ticket. So it's like you're getting a day free. Go to
HauntedCon.com.
Go there. Do it. Buy the ticket.
Do it.
You get to hang out with us all weekend and some really other cool people in the field.
Ask for the special scared package. It comes with little extras.
That's where they charge you twice the price for a ticket.
And definitely go because, like I've said many times in the past, Stowe does not get on planes. So this may be your only shot to ever see him ever. So just, you know, go out and meet him.
That's very true. Another place you can actually see us, that's if it's not up already. I haven't checked the internet in the past couple of hours, but Scared is going to be appearing on the Paranormal Television Network.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
And for those of you in the chat room, we'll provide you with a link. It's the Paranormal TV Network, and we're going to be alongside such shows as... good question. I don't know, but we're going to be on it. So it's just for that alone, tune in, check it out.
So that's a cooking channel, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
We're going to give you the recipe on
Zimmer
how
and Bourdain and us.
Do things the right way. A little bit of paranormal investigation, a little bit of urban exploration. All Scared all the time. Those other shows are going to be great, too. A full lineup will be posted when they've got it, and when we know, we'll let you know.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for that input, Chris. You're right on the money with that one.
That's my contribution. Word.
So, that wasn't really your contribution this weekend at the location. A lot went on.
I don't know what you're talking about. I plead the fifth.
plead the fifth?
No, we actually went to the Grand Midway Hotel.
Where is that?
That is in Winbur, Pennsylvania.
It's
about a 6-hour drive from here.
And it's called Winbur, Pennsylvania.
Not if you're in the car with Greg, it takes 4 hours, even in the rain, 90 miles an hour.
It was actually named after the Berwyn Corporation that originally started the town and owned it. What was it, a mining town?
Yes, it was a mining town originally. And so this place was built, I guess, around the 1850s or something like that.
There's a whole backstory. I don't know if you want to get into it now or later, but like I know the whole history of like how they did that because Blair, the owner of the place, Blair Murphy, awesome guy, and he told me the whole thing. So it's whenever you guys want to get into it, I mean, you want me to wind into it or?
Yeah, give us the history this is your job on the TV show. We're gonna blob it in your.
All right. So basically, what I was told from
you have to do it in the narration voice.
Okay. As I was told from Blair, he laid it on me. I think outside the box. Anyway, what he told me was basically this town was set up by these mining corporations, and what they used to do is they used to go to Europe and like was the late 1800s and stuff and promise these poor people, couples, a lot of them, we'll give you a job in the mining, we'll bring you to a nice place, you'll have your own house built for you, and you work for us. What happened was once they got there, the companies would say, the house isn't quite ready yet. We're going to put you up in this hotel, which is the Midway Hotel. They put them up there. They'd throw them a bunch of money, and there was a giant bar in the place. The place was also a brothel, so there was a lot of pretty women, a lot of hijinks going on, drugs, alcohol, women. These people would basically blow through the money in 2 days, 3 days, and the company, they would go, listen, the house, change your plans, you're not going to get the house, and you also owe us that money.
Oops.
So now you got to work it off. The other thing was they wouldn't pay the people with money. They would keep them in town. They would pay them with sort of like credit. And basically the credit was only good at the place.
Yeah.
And about 15 feet from the door is still a working train track. So after the people would get off work, the train would pull right up to the bar front, and people would get off there and they'd go in there. And that's how they kept these people there, because they basically never gave them cash. It's not like they could save their money and escape. The money was basically only good there. Very big mob presence is run. And there was one other thing that he told me is very interesting. To keep everybody from unionizing, everybody was Catholic that they got. But they set up churches all over town. Irish Catholic Church, Italian Catholic Church, Latino Catholic Church. So when everybody got together, they would... basically, no one got too close to each other, because they'd be like, I ain't going to side with this guy. He's Irish, or he's Italian, or he's Spanish. So they kept the from unionizing by separating them through their religion. Even though it was the same Catholic churches, they were just different ones all over town. So that's basically the stuff that Blair told me, and that's the interesting part of it. A lot of fights and stuff in there, too.
It definitely turned everybody against each other, playing both sides against the middle. And that's kind of where, you know, they got that expression, that, you know, I owe my soul to the company store, because that's, you know, like you said, they were paid in company scrip. And that was seen in many different of these, you know, towns in Pennsylvania at the time. I mean, a couple miles east, you had the Molly Maguires, who fought against stuff like that. And that's an entire different story I'm not going to get into, but if you're interested, you know, look it up.
There was also one other interesting thing I noticed on the wall, and if I'm mistaken, I don't think I am, but if I am, that place also has the license, the original license on the wall. I saw it there. It was very small. They were a legitimate, legalized morphine, cocoa leaf, and other narcotic dealer. What? So you could actually... It said... I saw the thing. So basically... It cost like $5, whatever the license was. That's what it said. So basically, not only were they selling alcohol and loose women, my favorite kind, I don't know, they were also selling cocoa leaves, make cocaine, and heroin, you know, morphine and heroin. So they were a legal dealer. So, I mean, people would just go in and blow their money, you know, in probably 5 minutes. I wouldn't, because I don't do stuff like that.
Blair also mentioned that if there were people who were kind of rabble-rousers, or they... kind of made a stand against this stuff, they disappeared.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that, yeah.
People disappeared. I mean, like you said, there's train tracks right in front of the hotels, so sometimes people ended up on the train, under the train, and even within the walls of the hotel.
That's right, and it's a room, they call it the monkey room. Well, the only reason they call it the monkey room is because there's a stuffed monkey, and I don't mean like a cute plush monkey.
It's not a sock monkey.
I mean, it's an actual... dead monkey that they had the taxidermist, you know, stuffed.
And it's in a mini recliner chair just sitting in the middle of the room.
And they found bones in the wall in that room. They found, I think, 3 bones.
And also in the kitchen. Because he said where he built the cat door, when he opened that, like right next to the door, that he built a cat door in the wall so the cats could go out to this little area in the back, like these steps. And he said they found bones in there as well. So there was 2 sets of human bones in his house.
And I believe there's still, I believe, if I'm correct, there's still a body buried in the basement.
I think that's under disagreement right now. They think it might be 2.
2? Oh, well, so there's definitely something in that basement.
Chip Coffee went through there on Sunday after we left. So, question mark, how many bodies are buried inside the Grand Midway Hotel?
There's an archway down there in the basement, which is not a full walking basement. You know, it's almost like a bigger than a crawl space. There's an archway, which Blair told us we could dig out if we want, but the mayor asked him to tell us to ask not to do it. But I think one of the reasons was because those tunnels go throughout the entire town and lead under most of the buildings there. So the thing is, people will probably smuggle in, you know, if you're dragging a dead body or kidnapping people, and, you know, cops come to raid the joint, they all flood out through there, and they go to all the buildings underneath. You know, so it's like, you know, we could probably go in there and end up popping up in the smoke store or something, or in the bar, you know, I mean, you know, a pizzeria or whatever.
That would be great.
That's what it was. It was an archway, but, yeah, it was a...
That's that would be a urban exploration extension of our paranormal investigation.
You need everything down there, air, because you I mean you need the air pumps going down.
Be such a wuss. You don't need air down there. Just hold your.
As long as you don't even need air for anything. You're like, you just go right through asbestos. You're like,
As long as there's asbestos, we're fine.
That's right.
We breathe that stuff.
I couldn't breathe after 10 minutes down there. I had to get out. That was my excuse for being terrified. But you know, I just said that I couldn't breathe.
One of the cool things about the Midway, it's actually not open to the public.
No, actually, this is one thing that we have to stress for everyone going, ooh, this is a new place to ghost hunt. It's a private residence.
Blair lives there.
He lives there. It's his house. Adam Bly, good friend of his, demonologist, lives there. It's you know, they're roommates.
He said he won't charge anyone, but he likes to invite people. Like, if you're invited, you stay for free. Like, he doesn't want to take any money from anyone, but you have to be invited there. And he had brought in, like he's saying, how he was drawn to this place, how it just keeps drawing artists and creative people like us. And he says it sucked us in just the way it sucked him into over there.
Well, the cool thing about that is that, I mean, everyone here at this table, everyone in this room, one of our favorite movies, if not, I know it's probably my favorite movie, is Fight Club.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, one of the themes in that movie is that, okay, you had to hit rock bottom. Only then can you build yourself back up. And it's like, you know, the things that you own end up owning you. So he moves into this, you know, destroyed hovel of a building on the other side of the train tracks. And here we are.
And he was a movie producer from Los Angeles.
Yeah, Blair moved
into this place. Yeah, like, you know, he didn't go. He went from like a big town into like this little a little small town.
It's a small town, literally right on the train tracks. And he totally did a Tyler Durden.
It's right in the middle of the town, like right on the front of a park. You could see it from the street. This isn't like hidden out in the woods. I mean, this thing is right there.
But for those of you who feel like clicking around while we're talking about this, because it's definitely an interesting looking place, go to either thecemetery.net or iliveinahauntedhotel.com. I repeat, iliveinahauntedhotel.com. Okay. And you can check out Blair's website. It's a detailed, albeit a little convoluted, exploration of the house. It suits it. It fits it. You'll read it, and you'll be like, wow, this place is cool. I have to check it out.
Another interesting thing is Blair told us that he actually bought that hotel on eBay. For like $10,000 or something like that. Ridiculous.
He said what happened was there was an old couple that bought it for $11,000. Won the bid. They went there. The place was so destroyed they didn't want it, so they gave it to him second bid. I mean, dude, his property tax in that town's probably like $200 a year. Like, you know what I mean? Like he, that's his place.
And that's why we're moving there next month.
That's right. And I respect that the guy just kind of left the whole Hollywood thing and did a Tyler Durden, and he made something out of that place too.
And it's very, and the every room in there, every room, there's like 36 rooms, completely different theme.
Oh, there's a ton of personality
in that place. Every room has its own personality, but he did it on the cheap. It's not like every room, it's like one of those things where it's haunted, but you could tell he spent $1 million. No, he found stuff and he built it. And the best way I described it is it looks like if Marilyn Manson lived in the Fight Club house on Paper Street. Like Marilyn Manson's take on Fight Club. And that's the best, that's the what I felt anyway. And apparently if I said it, then I must be right. But there were some rooms in there, man. Like, some of them had a great vibe. There was like a kiddie room. There was one room with like stuffed animals.
I mean, a lot of the rooms, you know, were informally named after guests that had stayed there. So like there was a little paper plaques up above the rooms to show people that had been there before. But each one had a seeming theme. And it wasn't even like a Mount Airy Lodge or, you know, Pocono Village type, like, hey, here's the astronaut room, or here's the chic room. It's like, no, this was cool. Like, I actually stayed in a room that had pictures of Jack Kerouac all over it and a poster of two girls kissing. So, hey, nice. The minute I walked in there, I'm like, yeah, I'm sleeping in here.
Oh, you were in the Warhol room.
Yes.
That room was awesome. Dark blue, very, very 60s, you know, and like the monkey room was completely Fight Club. He actually had a big Fight Club poster on the wall, but it was the same type of wallpaper, and there was a little tiny table with a little lamp and the stuffed monkey sitting in this mini a recliner chair, and that was it. And that was supposed to be one of the most haunted rooms, and the one across in the hall where Brooke slept in there because she's a ghoul and doesn't feel pain. I don't know how she slept there. I wouldn't even go in there. It was like a giant bed with tapestries hanging, very well decorated, dim, and it had like a devil skull tied to the tapestry hanging, there was a like a 4 foot Mary statue with a broken cross, and it was one of those. And that was another room that was supposed to be very haunted. And that one, when I went in there to film, I wouldn't even go into the bed because I thought a hand was going to come out under the from under the bed.
Actually, the first night, for a majority of the first night, I can't say the entire night.
That's because we were there pretty much all weekend. We were there for a full 2 nights.
We were there for 2 nights. So on Friday we got there. You know, most of these rooms are furnished. They have beds. But where do you think I picked to sleep?
Well, that's the thing. On the way up, you know, you were kind of going through the different rooms and the stuff that was on the website. You're like, oh, I'm gonna sleep in the monkey room. I'm like, oh God, why would you want to do that?
It's the only room without a bed.
And that's the only room without a bed.
But I said I'm gonna sleep in the monkey room, so how to do it?
Actually, the thing is, when Greg and I were driving down, like, we were tired and beat up and everything, and I'm like, man, and I got there and I saw the bar. The first room we camped, there's this gigantic bar. I mean, it was amazing. The bar looked like a boat that was cut in half, portholes and the. I mean, this was like the Misfits, zombie movies, like Marilyn Manson, rock and roll, punk rock. I mean, this was the quintessential rock bar. And when I got in there, my mood complete. I was like, this is the coolest spot, and that was only seeing the one bar. And I mean, it literally lit me up. This place was probably the coolest place. It's a fun house for people like us who like heavy metal and punk rock and zombies and stuff like that. Elvira, all that crazy shit, man. It really was amazing. Amazing.
He's also got a lot of Egyptian Anubis around and stuff like that. That's he's very fascinated by that.
That's actually a personal thing for Blair. He's really into Anubis. He likes what he stands for and the message. There's little kind of almost laminated, not post-it notes, but little messages everywhere, kind of from Anubis. Like, you'll go into the shower and it says, oh, please, you know, there's only a limited amount of hot water. Use only a little bit of it just for yourself. And if you don't, I'll know when you die and I weigh your heart.
Oh, that's what all those little things were? Yeah. Like, yeah. They were all like, okay, so basically, what's that? Yukonuba, that's the dog food, right? Yukonuba?
No,
that
it's
the one
Anubis.
Stupid joke. Come on.
So, yeah, so we were there for the 2 nights. First night, I'd say, was your pretty standard paranormal investigation. We had some friends along with us. John Zaffis was with us. He was upstairs
in his
plush, I don't even know what to call it. It was like a den of iniquity, that room.
He had a pimping room up
his
there,
room
John Zaffis.
Pimp.
Yeah.
Yo, Zaffis is my new cursing buddy. Because him and I just was like, F-words were flying in common. I hit it off with that guy. He was awesome, man. He's a really cool guy.
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
And I never met him before. I had a good time with him, man. He's really good. And he doesn't take himself seriously. And he's just real. But he's serious about his work. But, like, you know, he's not like a stuck up, like someone with his background. You'd think they'd be a little bit more like, oh, I run the show.
If we weren't the official paranormal show of John Zaffis before, we definitely are now.
At least I hope so.
So this one was for you, John.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that there was a lot more people there the first night. You know what I mean? So that's
there was a ton of people.
Standard.
There was a ton of people. I mean, in addition to John and Adam, who I mentioned before, both demonologists, I might add, we also had Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us. And this is the first time we had met her.
She was very nice. Very nice lady. She's very knowledgeable about the subjects that she was speaking about. So, like, and listening to not only Rosemary but John Zaffis and Adam Bly, listening to them kind of talk, you know, you take them very seriously. And I learned a bit listening to them. I found some really interesting nuggets of knowledge.
I could talk to them all day. I mean, I already knew Rosemary, knew her stuff. I mean, she's written and published 42 books, and she's working on a 43rd. And it's just like, she's one of those people that has knowledge, that has a ton of it, and doesn't treat you like you're beneath her for not knowing. She's, you know, very happy to tell you whatever she knows. She's very happy to work with you, and she's constantly trying new things. For instance, one of the things that we were doing on the investigation was, instead of just taking EVPs with your recorder and, say, an EMF detector to look for spikes, like, they had their K2 meter out, which for them was standard, and next to it they had a modified Geiger counter. It was modified so that you couldn't, it wasn't looking for radiation per se, but it was trying to measure beta particles. And she said that, I'm going to totally butcher the explanation because, to be honest, I didn't understand it. But she explained that, all right, there's probably some kind of burst of energy when a spirit comes into this plane. There's a burst that goes beyond normal EM signatures, and that's what she was looking for. She's like, hey, it's a theory. I'm not saying that this is exactly what it does, but that's what this meter is looking to do and measure, and I'm testing the theory out. Plain and simple.
She's still trying,
theorizing.
She seems
like a teacher. Like, she does, like you said, she doesn't talk down. She wants to tell you the information she has, you know what I mean?
And she's also in the field, so right. Not only, she's not just armchair knowledge thing, she's out there literally pioneering this for herself, which I thought was really cool, and you know, we're definitely looking forward to working with her again.
And Adam Bly was a very nice individual, very very soft-spoken, like very, you know, very soft-spoken guy, and he also seemed to know his stuff. But he's for a demonologist, as someone as religious as he is, he's not preachy about it.
I'm see, that's the thing. Once I found out that he was very religious, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, we're going to clash. Because you know me, recovering Catholic, I like thinking for myself. I don't like being told what to do.
Recovering.
You know, I don't like an institution, you know, across the globe telling me how to run my life. But quite the opposite. I got along with him really great. We had some really good conversations. And he wasn't preachy. It was, hey, I want you to have knowledge. Here, take it. Here's some knowledge. Go run with it. Think for yourself. Make your own decisions. But here, this is, I'm trying to help you. And I totally got that. He was very cool. Rosemary was cool. John, you know, obviously, always been really cool.
Looking forward to working with all three of them again on, you know, at the same time or separately. They're all great people.
But the thing about that is that, ironically, here, you know, we have all this talent in the building with us. We've got all these names. And Friday night, I'd say it was a run-of-the-mill investigation, but it was definitely nothing compared to the second night. But I think we'll get to that in a little bit. The first night, what did you experience, Jay? Anything happened to you on the first night?
I was nervous when it started getting darker in there. I mean, it was the general, like, because the place was so big, there was a lot of people around. Generally, I'm a nervous wreck to begin with. When I was listening to stuff, there was one point where I did mark it, where I heard something in the microphone. The mics were picking up everything, and I had four mics going that night, and Greg had the four infrareds going. And I heard one thing that I didn't explain that I have to check. It was breathing in a mic, but where the mic was set up, the camera was on, and it wasn't any of you guys screwing around with me. And it came up. That got me. But it was just more of the place was so dark. Even with the lights on and stuff, like, you showing the flashlight at the end of the hole, you couldn't even see. It was just the way the place was, and it was colored, because everything was mostly, like, blue, dark blues and dark greens, the way he had everything colored. I didn't really experience anything, because I think there was so much noise from us going around.
I think there was also the, just, you know, I mean, we first got there, we just drove 6 hours to get to the place from New York, and we were really hit with the coolness, the cool factor of the place. So I think we weren't even in the right frame of mind to really be perceptive to anything that first night. I mean,
really happy.
Yeah,
like,
it was just good.
I was jazzed to be there. Usually, like, you going, like, when we went into, like, space like Danvers, like, I'm just scared. You know what I mean? You know, one of the, I mean, they were screwing with me and Greg when we went to sleep, though. Everybody was.
Tell us what happened. Tell us.
Greg and I are such scaredy cats. We thought, you know, at least, like, you know, we didn't need four people in the same room. So Greg and I took the room, the red room.
Together?
We got a good energy, because it also had a bed and a couch.
So, wait. So you're saying that you guys slept in the same room in a 32-room hotel?
Yes.
Gay.
All right. Well, you know, we did manage. I gave Greg the bed, and he did have pajamas on. Like, all right.
So Stewie pajamas, I might add.
Yeah, Stewie pajamas. So we slept in the red room, which was next to the monkey room and across from the demon head room that Brooke slept in. So we figured if those were the two worst rooms, at least we're next to it. But then when Brooke closed the door, I was like, she's probably in there, like, worshiping Satan or, like, trying to get her on with the ghost. I was kidding. I was scared anyway. So we were just, the thing is, I think what kept me from being so scared is that I was so dead tired, because I had passed out on the couch for, like, a half hour before everyone's like, Jay, go to bed. So I'm on the couch. I'm facing out the door. Greg's laying terrified in the bed next to me looking out the door. I'm not saying you were more scared than me, Greg. I was both. But the thing is, I'm laying there, and there was a armless dummy that sort of looked like John Belushi that was sitting in the living room, in the dining room. But in the dark, because Brooke had to close her door, so there's no light now. And they're like, Jay, you want to leave some little lights? I'll leave the little bit lights on, so what do you shut the lights off?
You guys, you guys were sleeping together in the same room, and you needed a nightlight?
Well, we wanted a nightlight.
Okay.
So, in the hallway. So they shut it off. So every few minutes, somebody's like walking past the door. Like, everyone, I'm like, go to bed. Like, everyone, stop it. They weren't messing with us. And I'm just like, I know they're going to do something. I know they're going to do something. So I start passing out a little bit. I look out into the doorway, and there's just this dummy looking up with its mouth wide open like something out of The Ring. And I was like, I didn't think it was the dummy at first. I thought it was Blair on his knees with his mouth open like, ah. Like, so I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, what is that? What is that? And then I'm like, Greg, go move that. Greg, go move it. It's the thing from downstairs. Like, what do I got to move it? Usually at that point, Greg and I being panicking, you think everybody that did that to us would start laughing, but nobody's laughing. So Greg's like, I don't hear anyone else laughing. I don't hear anyone else laughing.
Well, actually, we were down the hall in my room trying to stifle our laughter.
Oh, you are? Okay. Because we thought, like, it's like, why would you screw with us and not reap the rewards of laughing at us?
I was in the monkey room laying on the floor with a towel over me, trying so hard. I was biting the inside of my lips not to laugh.
Oh, so you guys were, see, that's the thing, is we thought they just did it to, like, and then Greg and I, our fear was, is that now everybody is going to screw with us all night. So we're like, great, what are they going to do next? Like, I'm going to wake up and they're going to be standing over me. So I was like, but like I said, the fact that we were so exhausted that right after that, I just got up, I went into Greg's bed, he put his arm around me, I felt a lot better.
Don't forget your towel.
I didn't forget my towel. I needed that towel. It was cold.
I brought a towel. Greg didn't. He had to use my towel. I didn't bring a toothbrush. I had to brush my teeth with my fingers. But at least I brought a towel. I brought a towel.
So I guess more stories about the night, as well as more oral hygiene when we come back.
Holy nightmare.
Don't touch that dial, folks. We'll be right back.
Psychic, medium, healer, medical intuitive, teacher, author, and speaker. Where can you find all of these traits in one location? Go to www.spiritquesthealingcenter.com, the official site of Scared's very own Lisa Ann. Celebrating 10 years in business, Lisa Ann will be holding phone reading specials. Once again, go to www.spiritquesthealingcenter.com.
Have you been wondering what to get that special person in your life? Visit Mountain View Candleworks, your one-stop shop for candles, fountains, incense, specialty foods, and much, much more. Just visit www.mountainviewcandleworks.com. We make your candles with mountain care.
Are you wondering if the path that you've chosen is the right one for you? Or would you like to see a glimpse of what the future may hold? Tarot may be able to help you understand better the path that you're on. The cards don't lie, nor do they lead you astray, as they're a vehicle for messages from God, angels, and guides. Have your cards read for you by world-renowned tarot card master Scotty Roberts. To schedule a private reading with Scotty, visit www.tarotbyscotty.com today and find out what the cards may hold for you.
Haunted Con 2009, a paranormal conference you don't want to miss in Prescott, Arizona, September 24th, 25th, and 26th. Guest speakers at Haunted Con 2009 include A&E's Network's Chip Coffee, from Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International, Brian Harnwall, True TV's and Haunted Times Magazine's Christopher Moon, celebrity psychic Nancy Bradley. You'll meet many, many more celebrities at Haunted Con 2009 in Prescott, Arizona, this September 24th, 25th, and 26th at the historic Hotel St. Michael. To get your tickets at this intimate conference, go online to www.hauntedcon.com today. But hurry before they are sold out and you miss your opportunity to meet and learn from some of the most experienced and notable names in the paranormal field today. That's Haunted Con 2009 in Prescott, Arizona, a paranormal conference you don't want to miss.
And welcome back, everybody. It is Tuesday, August 4th, 2009, and you are listening to Scared on the Airwaves with your hosts, us. So, we've just been spending the past half hour talking about our first night at the Grand Midway Hotel, an adventure that we just completed this weekend that pretty much changed everything, and we're going to get to that in the second half of this show, Scared on the Airwaves here on the Dark Plains Talk Radio Network. And we were just talking about the the hijinks before we all went to sleep that first night on Friday night. And I'm kind of disappointed. Usually when we have these overnight investigations, Chris and I get into the giggle fit, and I didn't get to be a part of it this time.
Well, if you were as scared as Greg and I, then we had a nice half-hour laugh fest.
No giggle fit for me.
I just thought you guys were going to keep doing it all night, because the worst thing is waking up and someone standing over you. Like, I just thought like that, you know, he was totally going to do that, because, you know, like, Blair probably screwed with people all the time, and he saw me, Greg and I were like scared.
Well, I know the three of us were in the room kind of giggling it out, you know, trying to stifle our laughter when he was playing tricks on you guys, but I'm like, all right, 5 seconds after that, I just lay down, and you know me, once my eyes close, I'm out. I'm one of the dead. So.
I had a really good sleep in there, and I was surprised that because after when it got late, I was like, I can't sleep in here. Like, I got really scared. Not scared. I just didn't know what it was. It was just, like, weird. I wasn't, like, terrified or scared or, like, bad. It was just, like, I can't sleep in here.
Mm.
You know, but then I was, like I said, I was so tired, I just passed right out. And then, like I said, once Greg put his arm around me, I felt at home.
See, the thing about that, once morning came and I woke up, it was weird because it was really quiet. And the sun was shining, and it was a nice day, and I'm like, oh, all right, I guess I'll get up and go downstairs and see who's awake. And then Brooke comes to the door, and she goes, I can't find Chris. Yeah, I'm like, so? It's like, he's a grown man. Like, does he have to be in his room, you know, 24/7? She's like, no, but I can't find him. His clothes are there. His shoes are there. He can't go anywhere. And I'm like, so? Maybe he's somewhere that you're not looking? She's like, but I'm really worried. I'm like, I've known the guy for how long? He'll be okay. And I was really taking the role of, I don't care. But it's just, I know Chris, so.
Brian, what time did you guys wake up? Because Greg and I got up about 10:30 or 10:20 or something like that.
Actually, honestly, the only reason I did wake up, because I think I heard you, and I'm like, oh, I wanted to see you guys before you left. So.
Because we didn't leave right away. I mean, look, we had a couple of things to eat, and like we sat there and packed
up. I didn't even know what time it was, so I figured, oh, I have no idea how long I've been asleep, what's going on, oh my god, Chris is missing, and
we couldn't find him either, but I was like, look, we gotta get home.
Yeah, so I spent the night in the canopy room with the big ram head, and I woke up, I didn't really go to sleep that night, the bed was very comfortable, I didn't have any experiences or anything, but for some reason I just couldn't fall asleep, so I kind of got up pretty early. And I was roaming around, and I know that Chris went to sleep in the monkey room with the door closed, and I had got him to go to the bathroom, and I noticed that the door was open, that he wasn't in there.
So for those of you who weren't paying attention, this is not Chris sucking helium. Brooke is now on, describing her her worry for our fellow teammate. So take it away, Brooke.
So I had gotten up to go to the bathroom, and I noticed that Chris was not in the room that he went to sleep in. And I'm like, okay, maybe he got up, maybe he's having a smoke, maybe he's downstairs talking. The whole house was quiet. There was nobody else awake at the time, and I didn't think anything of it. So I went downstairs, and I think I saw Brian down there with Blair or whoever was out there, and I'm like, did you guys see Chris? No, I didn't see him. So I started walking through the house, and I checked the second floor. Then I said, maybe he went upstairs. I checked the third floor. Didn't see him. Checked the bathroom. Didn't see him. So I come back, and I go to Brian. I said, Chris is gone. He goes, what do you mean Chris is gone? Maybe he went out for a cigarette or a coffee or something. And I said, no, his shoes are still there. And he didn't have any shoes with him.
Pretty much. So, long story short, the man was in a different room. And
a hidden room.
The cool thing about it was that Blair, before we got to the hotel, he was like, oh, I wanted to have this as a surprise for you guys before you got here. He built a secret room. There was one bedroom that was kind of off the main hallway and connected by a smaller hallway. And he built a bookcase there so that it was flush with the wall. And in the middle of the night, Chris just thought it would be cool to go in there and go to sleep.
Well, I mean, how could you resist that? It's your Scooby-Doo room. I mean, you literally have to move a book. You have to, like, pull a book out a little bit, even to be able to, like, turn the bookshelf to get in there. So I'm like, I didn't see, obviously, I didn't know about that room beforehand. Otherwise, I would have picked to sleep in that room. But it actually had a bed in it. I woke up like 6 in the morning. Back was killing me. So I'm like, all right, I'm not sleeping on this cold-ass floor anymore. So I went in there, and then they just couldn't find me, you know?
But I'm kind of looking at our clock ticking here, and I just got to say, for all the people in the chat room, the missing Chris mystery was not the big thing that happened this weekend. So just don't be worried. You know, this is not what we've been holding out on you for. This is not what you've been waiting to hear. Chris sleeping in the Scooby-Doo room. Something did happen this weekend, and I've got to say, of all our investigations, of all the places we've been, we've been saying that for the past 7 years, you know, the Scared Crew has been comprised of skeptic, scientist, psychic. We come away from every investigation with a full spectrum of viewpoints, and because of that, a full spectrum of ideas and interpretations of what we do find. And this weekend, every member of the crew left the Grand Midway Hotel pretty much with a unanimous opinion, a unanimous decision that something happened, and that we saw and felt something. I'm going to let Chris go into a little more detail about that.
Okay, so night two, obviously, our psychic Lisa Ann shows up. Now, anybody who's watched the show or knows me pretty much knows how I feel about the paranormal and about psychics. I'm very, very hardcore skeptical about this stuff. Well, there's a room on the third floor. Now, as far as, because I'm just going to skip to that part because we're going to wind up running out of time. So I'm just going to skip to where something actually happened. We're actually up on a third floor. And Lisa Ann starts reiterating the story that we've heard from Blair and from Adam, almost like verbatim. Like, now, she doesn't know where she's going. We tell her the day of where you know the investigation is. So I'm just like shocked that like she's spitting out these facts. You know, and me and Brian kind of exchanged a look, like, because this is the first time that, like, wow, a psychic has finally impressed me.
Well, let's go into a little more detail. I mean, this is something that happened on the third floor. The first night, when we arrived at the hotel, we all kind of scoped out the place and picked rooms that we had wanted to sleep in. And, of course, you had said that you were going to sleep in the monkey room, so your choice was made before we got there. I walked around, and I originally was going to take one of the rooms at the end of this hall on the second floor. It was a writer's room, lots of old typewriters, bookshelves. It just looked very cool. It was like a beat poet's room. And mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sleep in here. And during the day, it looked fine. At night, it kind of got spooky, and especially after some of the stories that we were told about it. Right above that on the third floor, the room right above it was the room that you were talking about that you went in with Lisa Ann. That actually, both of us went in with Lisa Ann. And this messed up room and the things that happened there and the things that happened to us there, I figured, you know, I don't want to sleep in that room on the second floor. That's why I moved to the other hallway. And I had a long conversation with Adam in this room about some pretty, pretty deep topics. And all the things that he told me that I shared with you is the background that we got. You want to go into that?
Are we actually allowed to kind of give these people the background?
You can say what happened. You know, don't have to give names, but you can tell what happened.
Without naming names, now, Adam told this to Brian, and Blair told this to me, that whatever is in this room feels like it has the right to be there because it was, like, called there or because of what went on in this room. Now, there's a guy who, you know, used to stay in that room, and they told us that he would close the doors, black out the windows. He'd get like really high on pot and all sorts of other drugs, suspend himself from the ceiling with chains and in a leather suit, and just like he's baked, but he was also baking in the heat. And Blair said this guy would sit there in the dark all stoned out of his face and be like, demon, demon, demon. And this guy would have like these crazy visions of all this demonic stuff, and then he'd go, and I guess that would kind of be like his inspiration or whatever, and he'd paint over, you know, over the walls in the room So there's all there was all these like demonic paintings and stuff. Now I think there's only one or two because the rest of the walls are like ripped apart. They're ripped down.
Well, after that, those events happened, and the guy moved out. They figured, okay, yeah, this is not a good thing. And not, again, not to mention Adam lives there. So they tore down the images from the wall. And actually, thinking about it when we were driving home, I'm like, this room is on the third floor at one end of the hall. On the other end of the hall, on the opposite side of the hall, is Adam's room. Very nice, very done, with lots of pictures and paintings of angels defeating demons and stuff. It's like a very opposite-ended dichotomy.
Total contrast, yes.
You know, it's almost like good on one side, evil on the other side. And it was really made poignant by the way everything looked. I mean, this other room blasted out, not even finished, but because, you know, they ripped down the walls. Once we got this history, like I said, I didn't want to sleep in there because we were told, hey, something is in this room. And Adam said, you know, we got some activity in here before. I don't know if there's any activity now, but I want you to come into this room so you can feel. And I said, well, I'm not really sensitive. And he goes, no, I just want you to come in here and immerse yourself, and I want you to feel this sensation so that should you encounter this again in the future, you'll know and you'll be ready for it. I said, all right, I've got no problem with that. We went into the room and he says, well, you know, he felt as if it wasn't super present right now, like it was avoiding us. It didn't want to communicate. And he said, look, I don't want to communicate with you. That's not what I'm here to do. I know your purpose for here, and I just brought my friend in here to educate him. So,
now actually, Adam wanted to like exercise the room, but Vlad doesn't want him to do that. I believe that's correct.
That's correct. But I mean, just we stayed in that room and we had a really deep conversation about angels and demons and the fall, and you know why, because they always lose. Why can't these fallen angels repent and say, hey, yeah, you know what, we were wrong. Can we come back? And we just had a pretty deep philosophical and theologic discussion about these concepts. And of course, like I said, recovering Catholic, so I have all these images in my head and this residual guilt that it literally scared me to death, which is why I didn't sleep anywhere near that that night. But going back the second night,
just the four of us in
place
too.
Just to set the stage, Adam left, John left, Rosemary left, Blair left, he went to work, so it's just four of us in the house. Greg and Jay had to go home, they had to work that the next night, so there's four of us in the house by ourselves, a 32-room hotel, in the dark, the four of us.
When I first got there, I had taken Brooke's camera. Dad went out to get some batteries and other equipment. I took pictures of every room. It was still day up, and I spent actually like 8 to 10 minutes in that room. I took really pictures of like all the stuff in there, and it just looked like a room. I didn't get a feeling, but it just looked like something. Like, this is like not good. Like, I didn't get a feeling, but it just... But here's another question I had. How did Blair get... Like, how does he know that guy to do that? Did he know that guy was like that when he allowed him to stay there? Like, who is this guy?
I guess he just kind of figured it was, like, his expression of art. You know what
right.
I mean?
He was actually a local resident of the town that Blair had known.
Okay.
And he knew him and knew he was having some problems, and he thought that by letting him stay in the house, it would allow him to express himself and help him out.
Oh, okay. And it turned out that this guy was sitting there doing all that stuff, crazy stuff in there.
Now, when we got to that room, everything that we pretty much told you, Lisa Ann was saying.
Setting them up and knocking them down one by one. Every fact came out.
And like, you know, while she was saying that, I kept my face stoic, emotionless, expressionless, because, you know, some psychics tend to read people, and if she thought she was on the right track, you know, then she'd keep going. So I always make it a point to keep my face very expressionless so psychics can't read me, you know. But she impressed me, and Lisa, yes, you really did impress me, because I know you're listening. You really did impress me.
Yay!
Then at one point, our EMF detector started going off. Right over there's like a rusted bed frame. There's no actual mattress on it and stuff. But I was getting like a 4 and a 5 reading on the EMF detector on that side of the room. Turn around, there's the actual outlet now. Not getting a thing from the outlet. Pointed up towards the ceiling. Not getting a thing from the ceiling. pointed down towards the floor. Very, very, very slight readings. Put it up against the wall. Bury the needle.
Ironically, this was at a point where you're like, I said, you know, what's going on? You're like, oh, the needle got buried on this sign. And I said, well, where is it? He goes, oh, the wall. Hey, let's check to see if there's any wires or anything by it. When we pulled back, there was a curtain on the wall. When we pulled back the curtain, there seemed to be a doorway or a windowway, but it was boarded up. Later on that evening, we went outside to check where does this window lead to or where was it, and it's completely undetectable. That they must have resided the side of the place, because there's no evidence of a window being out there, and there's also no power lines, no phone lines, nothing to offer up as an explanation for what these readings could be. So, of course, right after this happens, my tape goes out. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, obviously I can't say, hey, paranormal activity, stop. But I yell down to Brooke. I said, Brooke, get me a tape now. We need a tape. So she runs up with the tape.
Yeah, I wasn't in the room with them.
And, I mean, everything continued from there. Lisa Ann started picking up, you know, saying some more of those facts. And she said, you know what? I feel very bad for him. I'm feeling, you know, I feel like I want to cry because, you know, he's saying he's not a bad person. And actually, and this is something that unnerved me, and especially after the conversation that Adam and I had the night before. She goes, he wants to know if you want to hear his story. I said, what? She goes, he said he feels like you guys aren't listening, and he wants to know if he can tell his story. And I said, Lisa Ann, since when has a spirit ever asked you permission to tell its story to you, or, you know, by extension, to us? I said, you know what? And I'm thinking back to the Speak on Demons that Adam and I had the night before, and why they exist and what their jobs are, and the fact that they're just there to deceive us. They hate us, and it's their job to pretty much destroy us. So I looked at Chris, and Chris looked at me, and we said,
we got to take you outside real quick.
We have to have a little chat down the hall.
So we went down the hall, and we told Lisa and pretty much everything that Blair and Adam told us the night before, because we didn't want to get her involved with something if she didn't know, you know, if this is a demon or some kind of evil presence. We wanted her to be aware of what she was dealing with. So this way now when we go back into the room, at least she knows what we're up against.
Told her about the guy that lived there and all that.
We told her everything.
And I said, you know, hey Lee, from what I understand, it's like, okay, it's their job to get to you, it's their job to make you feel sympathy for them, and that's how they entrap you. And could it just be using your empathy to gain access to you? I mean, it's one of those things. Chris and I know the story, so is this how it's trying to get to you? And she kind of nods. She's like, you know, it's possible.
She's a woman. She's a mother.
So we said, okay, look, here's all the facts that we have. You know, you pretty much already knew it. You already picked it out. It's just now that interpretation of what you're talking to. So she goes, okay. And she's like, I want to go back in there. So we marched down the hall and we went back in there, and it was a total flip. It was almost as if, okay, the jig is up. Yeah, you know who I am, and now I'm pissed.
Yeah, she kept saying this thing, whatever it was angry. I mean, the meters are still going off like crazy. And she said she was like trying to see its face, but it wouldn't let her. So she goes, you know, every time like I look, I guess mentally inward or whatever, to see its face, it like turns away and gets behind me. So, of course, me being me and being a skeptic, I'm going to get behind Lisa. I'm going to stand right behind her where this thing supposedly is or whatever. I step right behind her. I get a chill up and down my spine, like little tingles. Now, that's all right. It's a creepy room.
I mean,
if it happens once, yeah, not a big deal.
I mean, we're hearing noises. You're feeling things. Supposedly downstairs, you know, Brooke is getting weird stuff going on in the room. The temperature's dropping. At one point, Lisa Ann said she wasn't exactly asking it, but she felt like it's about to tell me its name. And behind me, and now keep in mind, I'm on cameras. I'm holding the camera, filming you guys. And behind my head, I heard something mumble. Wow. Wasn't you? And I actually said, I said, Chris, did you say something? And I pulled the headphones off. I said, Chris, did you say something? You're like, no. And Lisa Ann looks at me and she goes, that's funny, right? When you said that, I heard it's about to say its name. It goes, my name is. And she goes, I didn't hear the name, but that's the impression I got, that it was telling me its name. And I'm looking at you, you're looking at me. Lisa Ann's looking very, very concerned. She says, I'm telling it that I'm not, I don't fear it, I'm not afraid of it, and it's getting angry. It's getting angry that I'm not afraid of it, and it says, well, you're not afraid of me, but you should be.
And she kept, like, she kept moving, and I kept stepping next to her, and I swear to God, every time I would step next to this chick, I'd get that little tingle up and down my spine. And like I said, if it was one time, fine, not a big deal. I swear, like, half a dozen times in, like, less than 5 minutes. And every time, like, she would move and I'd move with her, I'd get that little tingle, almost like something tickles your neck and sends the shivers up and down your spine.
I mean, just me, myself, just watching you guys, like, I felt that fight or flee instinct. And, of course, I'm not going to flee. I'm going to stay there. But it was very powerful. It was almost like, okay, all the spotlights in the world are on us right now.
Yeah.
And what do we do? What do we do? We're confronting this thing. And I actually felt my, like, tears welling up in my eye. Like ooh, you know, like onions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, great. What's this? What's going on right now? So I'm just like, all right, blink it out. I have to stay with these guys.
Brian, in your educated guess, could you make out, just in a guess, what the it said? Like, was there anything that was legible where you thought it said something? Like, you know what I mean?
I have to go over the footage. I'm hoping I got something on camera if there was a sound, but to me,
it was just a mumble.
It was like if I went behind you and went, mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was definitely a two-syllable something, and it was one of those things that literally sounded like it came from behind me. And, you know, Lisa Ann saying, oh, it keeps coming behind me, and I keep turning to face it. It was just also
and
very
you were
coincidental.
Tracking her, Chris, like every time she moved, yeah, you stayed behind her, like you just kept filming her from.
Well, Brian was filming. I was with the, EMF detector, and
well, you didn't have a camera.
No.
Okay.
But.
Well, then after that, didn't Lisa Ann feel like something touched her?
Both of them did.
Yeah. Well, she actually she jumped right up on me. You know what I mean? Because she went to go into the other room, and she's like, "Oh, something grabbed me," and I felt something too, and we heard noises too, coming from like the ceiling almost.
She said that it was trying to scare her. It was trying to pretty much shake the fear into her. And I mean, this is one of those things, again, we're alone in the room. This is something that's going on, and pretty much what it came down to was we said, okay, yeah, we know it's here. It's nothing we could do about it. This is almost what we came to do. This is the investigation.
Exactly.
We're looking for activity. We found it. We're talking to it. It's confronting us. And, all right, time to go. And so Chris and I back out of the room, and Lisa says, all right, I want you guys to leave the room. I'm going to stay in there, but it's important. You have to leave the room first because I know how to keep it from leaving here. I know how to keep it from following us. So we go out. I'm standing there in the hall with Chris. I said, Chris, imagine yourself in white light.
You did.
I said, Chris, just imagine yourself in white light. Just do it.
I was unsettled.
This thing generally always stayed in the room since it's been there.
Yes.
It never came out of the room. That was its spot.
From what we understand, because of the actions that had there, the room is consecrated to evil, and that space is its room. It's allowed to be there.
Right.
So, I mean, literally, we're running out of time, of course, because we spent too much time with the giggles and the giddies, but this was Chris's first actual
ever
personal paranormal experience.
Ever. 7 years.
The skeptic and the psychic both agreed. We ran outside, and another interesting fact was that Lisa Ann said, I have to sage us, and is there any sage in this place? And we didn't know where it was. She miraculously came across it downstairs. She almost went right to it.
Immediately, yeah.
We went outside. We saged ourselves. And I guess for more on this story, and just for any questions you guys might have, we can pick this up again next week, or you can go to www.scaredonline.com for all the latest on the Scared crew. And definitely tune in next week on darkplainsradio.com for Scared on the Airwaves. That's us. I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
Jason.
And we're demon-free right now.
I'm Brooke.
And that's that. See you next Tuesday.
Holy nightmare.
On the air.
Listening to the best in talk radio on Dark Plains Radio on darkplainsradio.com. The best of all worlds, including paranormal, politics, sports, or anything of interest around the world. Listen into Between Two Worlds Radio with Derek White, Sky Cloud. a talk show interviewing a variety of paranormal friends and strange events. Psychic medium and paranormal investigator Derek White Skycloud will be doing his mediumship messages on darkplainsradio.com. Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern. It's a howling great time. That's Dark Plains Radio on darkplainsradio.com. The best of all worlds in talk radio.